As a means of allowing everyone to get better acquainted with each other, Sally invited all the cowboys to have supper in the big house that night. She fixed roast beef, mashed potatoes with brown gravy, lima beans, and hot rolls.
Do you folks eat like this all the time?
We sure do.
Pearly wishes he did.
I figure that during the trail drive, there are bound to be times when you boys are going to get pretty frustrated by pushing a bunch of cows. So, if they start giving you much trouble, maybe you can take some solace in having eaten their cousin tonight.
Hey, Smoke, the county fair starts tomorrow. You reckon we could all go in for a bit? I mean, especially as we're going to be on a trail drive for so long?
I don't see why not.
You know what we ought to do? We ought to play a baseball game.
What?
We ought to play a baseball game. We got enough for a baseball team. There's Pearly, Cal, Andy, Dooley, Hank, Leroy, Billy, Mike, and me. That's 9 people.
What about Smoke?
Smoke can be our manager.
What's a manager?
A manager is someone who doesn't play, but sort of bosses the ones that do.
That's Smoke, all right. With the bossing part, I mean.
Well, tell me just who we're going to play with this baseball team.
The St. Louis Unions.
The what?
The St. Louis Unions. They are a professional baseball team, and they go around playing local teams. If you beat them, they'll give you $200.
$200? That's a lot of money.
Yeah, that'd be $20 a piece.
You can forget that.
What do you mean we can forget it? It'd be good to leave $20 with my mom before we started on this trail drive.
You can forget it, because we ain't likely to win.
Well, come on, don't give up before you even try.
Didn't you say the St. Louis Unions was a bunch of professional baseball players?
Yes.
Then that means that they play baseball all the time. I probably ain't even played more than 2 or 3 games in my entire life.
Me and Dooley played a lot. We used to have baseball games out of the fort.
Yeah, and he's real good at it.
I've played a lot, too. Come on, we can at least try.
Jules, you're young, so I don't hold it against you none that you ain't really got no sense. But this whole idea of playing a baseball game against a bunch of people who make a living playing baseball is a...
Great idea.
What?
What?
I think Jules has a great idea. I think you should play a baseball game against these people.
Sally, I tend to agree with Pearly. Why humiliate ourselves before our neighbors against a bunch of professionals?
We're going to be working together for the next several weeks, right?
Yes.
Then what better way to learn to work together than to play a baseball game now? I think it will create a sense of cooperation and belonging.
Even if we lose?
Yes, even if you lose. Win or lose, if you all play together, you're going to come out ahead. Go on, Smoke. Sign them up to play a game.
All right. I'll challenge the... What are they called?
The St. Louis Unions.
I'll challenge the St. Louis Unions. But if we're humiliated, it's on your shoulders.
I can take it.
As Smoke, Sally, and the contingent from Sugarloaf rode into town, they passed under a banner that was stretched across the street, tied up on one side at Anderson's Apothecary, and on the other at Miller's Meat Market. Smoke looked at the big red letters that ran nearly the length of the banner. Welcome to County Fair. Several vendors had set up booths in the street and were selling such things as taffy, roasted peanuts, fudge, and slices of pie.
Look over there!
Jules pointed to an open field. There, several men wearing identical straw hats, white shirts, and matching trousers were throwing a ball back and forth.
Why are they all dressed like?
They are in their uniforms.
Uniform? You mean like the suits the soldiers wear?
Sort of like that. They all wear the same uniforms, so you can tell who is on your side.
Well, now, that don't make no sense at all. I mean, all you gotta do is look at who the person is.
It's probably for a little intimidation as well.
What does that mean?
It's just a way of giving them an edge.
Oh, I see. Well, it ain't working. Whatever it's supposed to be doing.
Shall we go over there and challenge them?
Yeah, let's do it.
Really? You were one of the ones who thought it was such a crazy idea.
Yeah, but that was before I saw what a bunch of sissies these guys are. I think we won't have any trouble with them.
Smoke cut his horse over toward the field where the uniformed baseball players were throwing the ball around. Half a dozen kids were sitting on top of a split rail fence watching the players.
Who's in charge here?
At Smoke's call, one of the players threw a ball to another, put his glove in his back pocket, expectorated a wad of chewing tobacco, wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, and came over to talk to Smoke.
I'm in charge here. What do you need?
Is it true that you'll give $200 to any team that can beat you?
Well, to a degree, that is true.
What isn't true?
We don't just give the money away. You have to enter the contest. And entering the contest is going to cost you money.
How much?
$50.
$50? Why does it cost $50?
Where do you think we get the money to pay those who beat us?
Does anyone ever actually beat you?
Not very often.
When can we play?
As soon as we get the $50.
Smoke, I'm sorry. I didn't have no idea it was going to cost money to play.
Yeah, that's all right.
Smoke took out the money and gave it to the ball player.
Here's your money, mister. Let's play.
Word spread quickly around town that there'd be a baseball match between the professional players who called themselves the St. Louis Unions and an aggregate of players from in and around Big Rock. As a result, nearly all the town gathered to watch the game. Baseball was not unknown in Big Rock. There had been games contested between men from Big Rock and teams from nearby towns. But this was the first time that a touring professional team had ever come to town, so interest was high. The Unions, dressed in their white uniforms, were on the field giving a display of their skills by batting the ball, scooping it up from the ground, and throwing it sharply from base to base. After several minutes of such activity, the manager of the St. Louis Unions walked across the field to speak with Smoke.
The game will commence in 30 minutes and we'll play by the Cartwright rules.
He handed Smoke a booklet.
If you don't know the rules, they're in this book. 3 strikes and you're out. 3 outs and the other team comes to bat. When each team has made 3 outs, that will be an inning. We will play 9 innings unless the game is tied. Then we will continue to play until the tie is broken.
We know the rules, mister.
Burley, Mr. Thayer's just extending a courtesy.
I think he's trying to intimidate us. But it ain't gonna work, mister. It ain't gonna work.
I'll tell my players to go easy on you.
Oh, I'd love for us to give his team a good beating.
I wonder where Miss Sally is. I thought she'd be here to watch us play.
Maybe she don't want to see us lose.
Lose, Mike? We haven't played the first pitch yet and you're already thinking about losing. That's a fine way to look at it, don't you think?
Well, come on, Jules. Look at them people. They got them fancy clothes they're wearing. They got them fancy gloves.
They've provided us with gloves.
Yeah, but they're nothing like them fancy gloves they all got.
Here comes Sally now. I wonder what she's carrying.
Sally was carrying a bundle, and as she approached them, she smiled broadly, then put the bundle down on a bench.
What have you got there?
Open it. The St. Louis Unions aren't the only ones with uniforms.
You bought us uniforms?
I bought all of you matching red shirts. That, with your blue denim trousers, will make a uniform.
Oh, yeah! And these here's a lot better looking than them white pajama things those folks are wearing.
Within minutes, every one of Smoke's men was smartly outfitted with the new red shirt, and the result was dramatic. They took on the same aura as the uniform St. Louis Unions. Sheriff Carson agreed to be the umpire, and he walked out onto the ball field and leaned over to brush off home plate.
Play ball!
They'd played 8.5 innings of baseball, and though the St. Louis Unions were leading, the score at 4-1 was much closer than anyone had thought possible. As it turned out, Jules was a very good baseball player, and Mike, Andy, and Leroy were also quite skilled. The others were good enough to keep the game from getting embarrassingly out of hand. Now, in the last half of the 9th inning, with none out, Billy was walked, giving them a man on base. Cal singled, but Billy was held at third. Hank popped up and the ball was caught by the Union second baseman. Leroy struck out, and that brought Jules to the plate.
Come on, Jules, a home run would tie the game!
Jules nodded, then struck his bat against the plate a couple of times before looking at the pitcher. The catcher watched him.
Boy, I've been watching you. You're a pretty good ball player. What are you doing with this bunch of yokels? Why don't you leave them and come with us?
You really think I'm good enough to play with you fellas?
I sure do.
The pitcher fired the first ball to the plate. Jules swung, but missed.
Oh, that didn't look good at all.
Oh, don't worry about it. Tommy's a very good pitcher. You've hit him 3 times today, and not even the best batter can hit him every time. That's why if you strike out, nobody would ever suspect you did it on purpose.
What do you mean, on purpose?
Well, we divide up the gate from every game. If anyone beats us and we have to pay $200, it comes out of our pocket. Your pocket if you join us. So why don't you just strike out now and end this game? It'll be better for all of us if you do.
Jules swung at the second pitch and missed again.
Attaboy. Miss this pitch and you'll be one of us.
Mister, If I strike out, it ain't gonna be on purpose. And I wouldn't want to play with people like you anyway.
Ha. Have it your way, kid. Quit playing around with him, Tommy. Throw past him.
Jules scraped at the ground with his feet and watched as the pitcher wound up, then threw. Jules swung the bat and had the satisfying feeling of making contact with the ball on the sweet spot of the bat. The ball flew high over the left fielder's head. Jules tossed the bat aside and started for first base. Billy came home, and Cal rounded second, headed for third, rounded third, and streaked home. Jules was right behind Billy, rounding second as Billy started home. Jules saw the left fielder run for the ball, then pick it up just before Jules reached third. He rounded third and started for home. Then, to Jules' surprise, the left fielder made a tremendous throw, and Jules saw the ball fly into the catcher's mitt just before he reached home plate. Jules slid into home plate, but the catcher was waiting for him, and he put the tag on him before he reached the plate.
You're out!
You should have took me up on my offer, boy. You wound up being out anyway. Now you got nothing to show for it.
Yeah, I've got something to show for it.
Jules stood up and wiped the dust from the seat of his pants.
I got my honor.
Even though Smoke's baseball team had lost to the professionals of St. Louis, they had played so well that they were being heralded as heroes by the citizens of Big Rock. As a result, none of the boys had any difficulty in finding young girls who were willing to dance with them. In fact, several of the girls came up to the boys hinting that they were thirsty or suggesting that their dance card was empty for the next dance. The only ones who were not having a good time at the dance were the ball players of the St. Louis Unions. When they saw that the girls were more interested in the young men of Smoke's baseball team, they began to get angry and they started taunting Smoke's men.
Perhaps we should have lost the game. Then the girls would have taken pity on us, as they have these poor rubes.
I think we should have played the girls. They would have given us a better game.
One insult led to another, until finally one of the unions reached out and tripped Jules as he was dancing.
Ah! What's the matter, boy? You so clumsy, you can't even keep your feet?
You tripped me!
The St. Louis player pushed Jules back, and another St. Louis player tripped him again.
My word! They're as clumsy on the dance floor as they are on the baseball diamond.
This time when Jules jumped up, he came up swinging, connecting with a right jab to the chin of the one who was tormenting him. The player went down, but another player attacked Jules. Within seconds, the rest of Smoke's men joined in the action, and the entire dance came to a halt as the young men from both camps traded blows. The fight continued on a grand scale, with tables and chairs turning over, punch bowls being spilled, and men and women shouting, some in alarm, and some in encouragement. The fight lasted for several minutes until, eventually, Smoke, Sheriff Carson, and two of his deputies managed to break it up. As the fight finally came to an end, it became obvious that Smoke's men had gotten much the better of the St. Louis Unions, all of whom were now nursing black eyes and bloody noses. The cowboys rode back out to Sugarloaf that night.
Well, they may have beaten us baseball, but we sure gave them a licking where it counts.
We sure did.
You won on the baseball diamond as well.
No, we lost. 4-3.
Uh-huh. Only their manager bet me $200 that they would win by at least 5 runs.
They only beat us by 1 run.
That's right.
Smoke reached into his pocket and pulled out a wad of bills.
And that's why we won $200. You fellas can divvy it up exactly as you would have had we won the game.
Then I can leave my mom $20 before we leave.
$40. You can have my share.
$60.
I give you my money too, Jules. Only I ain't had no work in near 2 months now.
Me neither.
I thank you, but Ma don't need no more money than this. This'll keep her till we get back. Thanks to you two.
Nah, wasn't nothing.
You didn't really make a bet with that baseball team, did you?
Sally spoke that night as she lay in bed beside Smoke.
What makes you think I didn't?
Because I was with you all day, remember? You couldn't have made such a bet without me knowing about it.
Well, suppose I didn't.
Oh.
What are you laughing at?
Nothing, except you are a wonderfully generous man, Kirby Jensen.
So are Pearlie and Cal. They gave their money to Jules.
I know. You have been a wonderful influence on them.
We all know who's been the real influence on them. No telling where those two would be by now if it weren't for you.
Let's face it. You and I make a wonderful team. That's why I know we are going to get there first.
Smoke lay quietly for just a second. Then he raised himself up on one elbow and looked down at Sally.
What'd you say?
I said we make a wonderful team.
Yeah, I heard that part. I mean, what did you say after that? Something about getting there first.
Yes. I said that's why I know we're going to get there first.
Get where first?
To Sorrento.
What does getting there first have to do with it? First before who?
First before anyone.
Sally, darling, you aren't making sense. Did you or did you not tell me that Mr. Abernathy will buy our cattle at $35 a head?
Yes.
Then what does getting there first have to do with it?
Well, actually, what he said was, he will buy the first 3,000 head of cattle delivered to him. I just assumed it would be us.
You just assumed.
Yes, darling, I know we will get there first.
We damn well better get there first. Otherwise, we'll be worse off than we are now. I'd hate to be somewhere on the trail facing a winter like the one we faced before.
It's a simple thing.
A simple thing?
Yes. Our cows are here. We want them in Sorrento. All we have to do is take them there.
Right. That's all we have to do.
No matter what happens, Smoke, I know you will get us there. I have all the confidence in the world in you.
If just like that, how can I let you down?
The first pink fingers of dawn touched the sagebrush, and the light was soft and the air was cool. This was Smoke's favorite time of day, and as he stood by the fire drinking coffee, he watched his cowboys moving the herd together for the start of the drive. He noticed Sally had just prepared breakfast.
Good morning.
Good morning. If you want to call the boys in, breakfast is about ready.
Sally had gotten up even before sunrise to cook a full breakfast meal for 11 people. After breakfast, she would pack up the chuck wagon and leave, going out ahead of the herd. The men would lunch in the saddle with strips of jerky and cold biscuits. They wouldn't see Sally again until supper. Smoke walked over to the chuck wagon to see the breakfast she had prepared. She had scrambled eggs, fried potatoes, sausage, stewed apples, and biscuits and gravy.
Good Lord, Sally, I hope you don't feed them this big a breakfast every morning. My Lord, they'll get so fat they can't even ride.
Oh, this is the first day. It's just my way of getting things started on the right foot.
Yeah, well, I hope you don't spoil them into thinking that they're going to eat like this every meal. I mean, you aren't going to feed them like this, are you?
Maybe not quite this well, but don't forget, a well-fed cowboy is a happy cowboy.
You didn't pack your china and silver, did you?
Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe I will do that.
Right.
Call the boys in, Smoke. I need to get going if I'm going to get ahead of the drive.
The drive had been out for 4 days and nights so far, and there had been no real problems except fatigue. Smoke was pleased with the job Pearlie and Cal had done in picking hands for the drive. Billy Cantrell and the Buttram brothers had proven to be great hands. Mike Kennedy had as well. Only the two former soldiers, Andy and Dooley, were inexperienced, but not even that was causing much of a problem. They were good workers and eager to learn from the more experienced of the outfit. It was early in the morning of the fifth day, and the last morning star made a bright pinpoint of light over the purple mountains that lay in a ragged line far to the north and west. The coals from the campfire of the night before were still glowing, and Smoke watched as Pearlie threw chunks of wood onto them, then stirred the fire into crackling flames, which danced merrily against the bottom of the suspended coffee pot.
Want some coffee, Smoke?
Yeah, thanks. Who's watching the herd?
Billy and Mike ate their breakfast early, gone out to relieve Cal and Andy.
Cal and Andy were riding Nighthawk?
Yep.
I didn't think Cal would have the nerve to ride along with Andy after that joke he pulled on him.
Smoke's comment referred to an incident on their first day out. Cal had told Andy that the feces from some cows were edible, and to prove his point, he went over to pick up a handful of cow manure and eat it. While all the other cowboys laughed, Andy fought hard to keep from gagging. Then, feeling sorry for him, Pearlie explained that what Cal had eaten was actually a piece of Sally's gingerbread.
Well, sir, Andy took it pretty good, and I think Cal's sort of ashamed of himself for the joke, so they've been getting along real good since then.
Speak of the devils, here they come.
Both men dismounted, then went over and poured themselves cups of coffee. Andy walked over to a log and sat down with some of the others to wait for breakfast, while Cal came up to Smoke and Pearly.
Cal's quiet through the night.
Bedded down like they had blankets and pillows.
That's good.
You know what I'm beginning to think? I'm beginning to think we might just pull this off. Look, we've been out a full 4 days now, and there ain't been no trouble of any kind.
We've only been out for 4 days. Hell, we're barely off Sugarloaf, and you already talk about how easy it's going to be.
No, I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm just saying I believe we can do it.
I didn't know you ever doubted it.
Sure, I tell you what, this coffee was good, but I'm getting a little hungry. I wouldn't mind having a biscuit or two.
I seen Sally put some in the Dutch oven just a little while ago. I expect breakfast will be ready in a minute or two. Guess I better wake up Billy and Hank.
Now, let me do it. They seemed to take particular pleasure in waking me up this morning at 4 when it was time for me to take the watch. I'm gonna enjoy returning the favor.
Be my guest.
Cal crept over very quietly until he was positioned exactly between the two sleeping men.
All right, you two, let's go! Get him up, hand him out. We can't wait around here till Christmas.
What is it? What's happening?
Damn you, Cal. What do you mean, waking me up like that? I was talking to the prettiest little lady you ever did see in my dream. And if I had seen you in my dream doing something like what you just done, why, I would have shot you down, and that's a fact.
You'll dream her up again, I'm sure. Because to tell you the truth, dreams are about the only place you'll ever be talked to a pretty girl anyway.
Oh, yeah? Well, what about after that baseball game? I danced with lots of pretty gals.
They wasn't dancing with you. They was dancing with the baseball player. Anyhow, what are we standing here gabbing for when Miss Sally's gone through all the trouble of cooking up us a good breakfast? I figured you'd want to eat the biscuits while they're still hot.
I tell you what I would like to do with those biscuits while they're still hot, and it ain't got nothing to do with eating them.
Come on, boys, we're burning sunlight!
After breakfast, all the cowboys saddled their mounts, then rode out to get the herd moving again. Nearby, 3,000 head of cattle, fully awake on this a new day, milled around nervously. The animals, used to the freedom of the open range, were now forced together in one large, controlled herd that made them acutely aware of different sights, sounds, smells, and sensations. They were growing increasingly anxious over the change in what had been their normal routine. So far, there had been no trouble, but Smoke knew that the least little thing could spook them, a wolf, a lightning flash, or a loud noise. Although Sally's job was to cook, sometimes in the morning she would saddle her own horse and help the others get the cattle moving. Smoke watched her dash forward to intercept 3 or 4 steers who had moved away from the herd. She stopped the stragglers and pushed them back into the herd. Smoke couldn't help but marvel at how well his wife could ride. It was almost as if she and the horse were sharing the same musculature and nerve endings. Once the herd was actually underway, though, Sally returned to the chuck wagon. The vehicle was being drawn by a particularly fine-looking team of mules. Smoke had hitched up the team for her, and he was standing alongside the wagon as Sally approached.
Maybe you should break those 3 steers up. I swear, this is the 3rd day in a row I've had to deal with them. I believe if they were separated, we wouldn't have a problem.
Or maybe we would have a problem 3 times as large. How do you know each one of the cows wouldn't just recruit new cows to help them out? Then you'd have 3 eruptions instead of just 1.
You may be right. I guess I can push them back in tomorrow, or every day, as far as that goes, just as long as we're on the trail.
That's my girl.
Sally walked up to the side of the chuck wagon and tied a knot in a hanging piece of rawhide cord. Each knot represented a day, while a double knot indicated a Sunday. As they knew what day they left, the strip of rawhide would serve as an effective calendar.
How's the chuck wagon working for you? Is there anything we need to change?
Nothing needs to be changed. I have to hand it to you, Smoke. When you built this wagon, you did a great job.
All I did was put it together. You're the one that had it all laid out.
Well, I guess I'd better get going.
Sally climbed up onto the wagon seat, and with a slap of the reins against the backs of the team, the wagon moved forward. Smoke watched Sally move out at a rather brisk rate, going much faster than the herd. It was her job each day not only to find a spot that would be suitable to bed down the herd for the night, but also to have the camp established and the supper cooked. By the time the weary cowboys arrived with the herd, they would be ready to eat, then turn in, leaving Sally to clean up and roll out the bread dough for the next day. Smoke watched Sally drive her wagon by the herd. Then he swung into the saddle and turned his attention to the task at hand, moving the herd another 20 miles. The cowboys knew something was different one morning a few days later when Sally did not go ahead of them, but stayed with the herd as it started out. Then, at mid-morning, Smoke called a halt and gathered all the cowboys around him.
Boys, just over that rise there is the little town of Braggadocio. Sally says we're going to need a few more supplies, so I'm going to send some of you into town to pick them up.
I'll go.
Yeah, me too.
Heck, I want to go as well.
May I go?
You can't all go. I've got to keep some of you back to watch over the herd.
I'll stay back.
No, Pearlie, I want you to go in with the others. Cal, you stay back.
All right.
What about sending half of us in now? Then we switch so the other half can go into town tomorrow.
I wish I could let you do that, Andy, but the truth is we can't take the time to spend 2 days here. So what I want is for those of you who do go into town to buy the groceries on Sally's list, then get back out here.
Wait, you mean we can't even go into the saloon for a beer?
I'm not that hard a slave driver. You can spend a little time in the saloon, as long as you remember that I want you back here by nightfall.
I'll keep an eye on them, Smoke.
You are going to keep an eye on them, Pearlie? Isn't that a little like setting the fox to watch the hen house?
Oh, now, Miss Sally, you really think that?
I was teasing you, Pearlie. I know you aren't going to get into any trouble.
I didn't think you meant nothing by it.
All right. Who's going and who's staying?
You already told me I was staying.
Cal, if you want, I'll stay and you can go.
Nah, you go ahead. I don't mind staying.
I'll stay.
Finally, it was agreed that Cal, Hank, Dooley, and Billy would stay with the herd. Pearlie, Andy, Leroy, Mike, and Jules would go into town. Sally presented Pearlie with the shopping list and some money.
This is what I want.
I'll get everything you got on that list, Miss Sally. You can count on it.
I know I can.
All right, what are you boys waiting around for? We're in the middle of fall, and it's getting dark earlier every day. If you're going to be back by nightfall, you'd better get going.
Yahoo! Come on, boys, let's go. I aim to spend me some of that baseball money.
Jules?
Jules looked back toward Billy.
Would you see if you can find me some whorehound candy? I'm just real partial to that.
Sure thing, Billy. I'll bring you some back.
Thanks.
After they bought the supplies, they walked out of the store, and Pearlie tied the bag of groceries to his saddle horn.
Let's find us a saloon.
I don't know. I think we should get on back.
Pearlie, come on. Smoke said we could stay in town for a while. I plan on having a couple drinks and maybe eating in a place where I can sit in a chair at a table. What you say?
Pearlie stroked his chin as he considered it, but didn't say anything.
Look, you're our boss, so if you say we gotta go back, why, we'll all go back. I'm just telling you that Smoke did say we could stay for a while.
All right, you can stay. But just remember what Smoke said about staying out of trouble. Oh, and be sure to get back before nightfall tonight.
We will.
Mike?
I'll look after.
Pearlie nodded again and mounted his horse.
Before nightfall.
The cowboys watched Pearlie ride off before they started looking for the saloon. Then, finding it, they tied up to the hitching rail out front, pushed through the batwing doors, and strode up to the bar, catching the bartender's eye.
Jules, I don't want to embarrass you or anything in here, so what'll it be? A beer or sarsaparilla?
I'll have a beer.
Good man.
After ordering beers for each of them, Leroy asked the bartender where they might find a whorehouse.
Ain't nothing exactly like that in Braggadocio, but we got a top floor here with private rooms and beds and half a dozen whores that look as good as any you're gonna find in some big city somewhere.
As the bartender was talking, he saw Jules take a sip of his beer, then make a face at its bitterness. The bartender looked at Leroy and pointed to Jules.
Ain't this here boy kinda young to be running with you fellas? Most especially if you're talking about whores and such.
Mister, you got something to say about me, you say it to me. Don't be talking around me.
All right. I'm telling you, I think you're still a little too wet behind the ears to be in here.
You know, I heard there was lots of young fellas no older than me killing and dying in the late war. If it was to come down to that again, do you think I would be old enough to go to war?
Well, I reckon you might be.
So that means I'm old enough to die?
I suppose so.
That makes me old enough.
How does that make you old enough?
Well, now, a fella doesn't get any older than dead, does he?
I reckon you got a point there, boy. Yes, sir. I reckon you got a point.
Where at is a good place to eat?
Jenny's place? Just next door.
Well, sir, me and my friends is going over to this here Jenny's place to get us something to eat. Then we're going to come back here for some serious drinking and to make a run on them whores. Don't you let them get away.
Oh, don't worry none about that. They'll be here.
The cowboys left the saloon and then turned into Jenny's place, which was next door. Their orders came quickly, but while Mike, Andy, and Leroy wolfed down their meals, Jules merely picked at his food.
You planning on eating the rest of them taters?
When Jules shook his head, Leroy took Jules' plate and shoveled the uneaten potatoes off onto his own. Leroy spent the rest of the meal instructing Jules on the proper techniques of whoring.
You're probably thinking you should get yourself a real young whore, ain't you? Maybe someone about your own age?
I don't know.
Come on, boy, pay attention. I'm trying to learn you something about whoring here.
Leroy, leave the boy alone.
I ain't doing nothing wrong. I'm just trying to learn the boy a few things. You got no trouble with that, do you, boy?
No, it's just that...
It's just what?
If Pearly was still here, I don't think we'd be doing this.
Doing what?
Talking about going with whores and such.
Yeah, well, Pearly ain't here. And he didn't say don't go with no whores now, did he?
No.
So that takes care of that. Now, how about what I asked you a while ago? If you was to have your choice betwixt a young whore and an old whore, which one would you choose?
Well, I'd choose the young whore, I reckon.
Why?
Well, because I'm young.
Uh-huh, and that's just where you'd be making a big mistake.
Why would that be a mistake?
Because if she is that young, she won't be in knowing a whole lot more about it than you for all that she is a whore. What you need is to find yourself the oldest one in the place. See, that way, there ain't no kind of way she ain't never been rolled and no kind of man she ain't never throwed. Besides which, the older the whores get, the younger they like their men. An old whore would be a real good one for breaking you in.
Leroy, will you leave the boy alone? You're as full of shit as a Christmas goose. You know that? Don't go listening to him, Jules. He's just trying to make sure he gets the youngest and prettiest one for himself. By the way, you going to eat the rest of your steak there?
Without answering, Jules forked the rest of his steak off his plate and onto Mike's.
That's where you're wrong. I for sure don't want the prettiest one. The prettiest one think their good looks is all they need. The ugly ones now will do whatever you want because they just want to stay on your good side. Unless you get one that's ugly but don't know that she's ugly. Them's the worst kind because they figure they're pretty enough for looks to get them by. They don't try none at all. An ugly woman that thinks she's pretty and don't try? Well, you sure don't want that kind of whore if you can help it.
I keep telling Leroy he ought to write a book. I mean, as much as he knows about whoring and all.
Well, that's a fact, all right. I could write me a good book.
If you could write.
Boy, you looking a little peaked. You feeling all right?
Sure, I feel fine.
When they returned to the saloon after their meal, they found a table and sat there having a few drinks while they were waiting. As they waited, Jules studied the women who were at the moment working the men for drinks. One seemed to have a softer smile and a gentler disposition than the others. Somehow, she seemed less threatening to him.
If we do this, that's the one I want.
No, that ain't the one you want. Give me a few minutes. I'll find the right one for you.
I don't want you to find one for me. That is the one I want.
Boy, you didn't listen to nothing I said, did you?
That's the one I want!
All right, but don't say I didn't warn you none.
Even as they were talking, one of the women came over to the table where the four men were sitting. Putting a hand on her hip and thrusting her hip out provocatively, she leaned over the table.
The bartender says you fellas want some company tonight.
Company, yeah.
First, we must get the unpleasant business of money out of the way. Our company will cost you gentlemen $1 each, or $2 apiece for the whole night.
We can't stay all night. Fact is, we can't stay very long at all, so we was wondering, I mean, seeing as we can't none of us stay very long, we was wondering if maybe you'd give us a cheaper price.
My, ain't you boys cheap. Sorry, boys, but we can't give it to you no cheaper than $1. But if you're willing to pay for it, why, we can sure show you a good time. My name's Tilly.
Tilly, I'm laying me a claim on you right now. And the youngin' here wants that one over there.
Have you ever been with a woman before, honey?
No, ma'am.
Then you've made a wise choice. Donnie's just real good with young boys who are doing it for the first time. It's almost as if she has a calling for it.
Tilly signaled the other three whores, and they came over to the table to stand beside her. She made the introductions, ending with Donnie.
Donnie, this little sweetheart is one of your specials, if you get my meaning.
She means he ain't never done it before.
Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
Don't you be worrying none about it, honey. We're gonna have us a fine time. You'll see.
Well, shall we all go upstairs?
I reckon so, unless you're wanting to do it right down here on the table. And I'm that ready, I'm about to bust.
Well, we certainly don't want to see him bust, do we? Come on, ladies. I do believe these gentlemen are badly in need of our services.
As they all climbed the stairs, Jules was certain that everyone in the saloon was watching them. But as they reached the first landing, he happened to glance into the mirror hanging behind the bar, and it didn't appear that anyone in the saloon was paying the slightest bit of attention to him and his friends. He was surprised by that, but it did make him feel a little less embarrassed. Once he and Donnie were in her room, Donnie shut the door behind them, then lit a single candle. She turned and smiled at Jules as she began stripping off her clothes. Jules watched, spellbound, as the smooth skin of Donnie's shoulders was exposed. Then she turned so that he saw only her back as she removed the rest of her clothes. Calling on all the tricks of her professional experience, she used a shadow here, a soft light there, and a movement to hold her body just so. As if by magic, she seemed to lose so many years in age and gain so much in mystery that she became as sensual a creature as anyone who had ever appeared in Jules's fantasies. Finally, raising the corner of the sheet, she managed to slip into bed, using the shadows in such a way that he wasn't sure whether he had seen anything or not.
What is it? What's wrong? Are you just going to stand there like that?
Like what?
Like that? Honey, you still have your clothes on. Do you plan to keep your clothes on?
Oh.
Well?
Well, what?
Honey, are you going to undress or not?
Donnie, would you mind if we...
If we what?
If we, didn't really do anything. I mean, you can keep the money. It's just that, well, I don't think my ma would approve.
Sit here beside me, honey. Unless I miss my guess, your friends are waiting just outside the door.
Waiting outside the door? Why would they be waiting outside the door?
To see if you're really gonna do anything. If they don't hear anything going on in here, they are going to tease you unmercifully.
Oh.
I tell you what. Let's give them a show.
What do you mean?
Start bouncing up and down on the bed.
Now, as he understood what Donnie was suggesting, a broad smile spread across Jules's face. Outside the door, Leroy, Andy, Mike, and the three women with them were straining to hear what was going on inside.
How come there ain't nothing happening?
Give him time, honey. The kid's green. Donnie will have to work on him for a little while.
There they go! Hot damn, they are at it now!
Damn! What's that boy doing that's so great?
Honey, that's not a boy. Sounds to me like he's all man.
Inside the room, Jules and Donnie continued to bounce on the bed. Then she held up her hand as a signal. With a cutting motion of her hand, she signaled for them to stop.
Okay, honey, wait a minute, then go on out. I promise you, you won't be teased.
Thanks.
You're a sweet boy. Come back and see me in a couple of years.
The sun was setting as the four young cowboys returned to the encampment.
Well, all back in one piece, I see.
Yes, sir, Smoke. You said get back before sundown, and that's just what we done.
Did you have a good time?
We had a fine time, but I don't reckon none of us had as fine a time as Jules here.
Oh?
Yes, sir, he had him a fine time. Just ask him. Maybe he'll tell you about it. He won't say nothing at all to us.
Well, I'm glad you boys had a chance to enjoy yourselves. That means that by tomorrow, you'll all be bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and ready to go.
Yes, sir, we will at that. Come on, boys, let's get the horses into the remuda.
Sally held some supper for you.
When the other cowboys left, Jules hung back for a moment.
Smoke?
Yeah.
To tell the truth, I didn't do nothing. Me and Donnie just made him think I did. But don't tell him, all right?
Don't worry. Your secret is safe with me.
One morning, less than a week after their stop at Braggadocio, Smoke noticed that Billy Cantrell seemed a little detached. While the others laughed and joked over breakfast, visiting for the last few minutes before getting a herd underway, Billy was walking around the encampment, pulling stems of grass and sucking on the roots, snapping twigs and smelling them, and scooping up handfuls of dirt to examine them very closely. Smoke had already done those same things, and he knew exactly what Billy was looking for. He walked over to talk to the young cowboy. Billy looked up at him, but before he could say anything, Smoke spoke up.
I know.
Do you?
Billy, I was sucking on grass roots before you were born. I know exactly what you're doing.
What's the name of that river you say we'll be crossing next?
The Eagle River.
How far do you make it from here?
I'd say about 40 miles.
They're gonna be dry miles.
Yeah, I know. From the looks of the sign, there hasn't been any rain here in quite a spell, which means that any narrow streams or watering holes between here and the Eagle will, more than likely, be dried up.
40 miles. That means what? 2 more days without water?
I'm afraid so.
You probably know this country better than I do, Smoke. You know of any year-round streams or creeks between here and Eagle River?
There aren't any.
Damn. That means the herd is gonna get awful thirsty.
Yeah. Which means they'll spook easily. You boys will just have to be very careful when you're driving them. Don't make any sudden movements or noises. The least little thing, sneeze or taking off your hat too fast, will spook them into a stampede.
We'll have to tell the others.
Billy, have you ever seen a stampede?
No, I haven't. Have you?
Yeah, but not one with this many cows. If this herd goes, I can promise you, we will have our hands full.
You got any suggestions on the best way to handle them if they start?
Yeah, my suggestion would be to get the hell out of their way.
Most likely that ain't something we'll have to tell them. I reckon if anyone sees a whole herd of cows coming down on them at a gallop, they'll just natural get out of the way.
You may have a point there. Next thing after you get out of the way is just to follow them. And when they run down a little so that you can turn them, try and head them back in the right direction. But the best thing to do is to keep them from stampeding in the first place.
Over the next 2 days, they pushed the cows through the dry area as gingerly as if the animals were made of glass. They made no sudden moves, whether mounted or not, and when they spoke to each other, they spoke in whispers. Suddenly, Dooley Thomas's horse was spooked by a rattler.
Stampede! Stampede!
Smoke was riding on the left flank, and fortunately for him, when the stampede started, the herd veered away from him toward the right, a living tidal wave of thundering hoofbeats.
Yeah!
Leaning forward in his saddle, Smoke urged his horse to its top speed, allowing him to overtake the herd. Then he rode on their right in a desperate attempt to turn them back into the proper direction.
Yeah! Hey! Ho! Ah! Yeah!
Then, to Smoke's horror, he saw Dooley fall from his horse. The stampeding cows adjusted their direction toward the helpless rider, almost as if they were intentionally trying to do him harm. Dooley regained his feet, but without a horse, all he could do was try to outrun them on foot. It quickly became clear that he was going to lose the race. Smoke watched the young ex-soldier go down. Smoke raced to Dooley, but even before he dismounted, he knew the young man was dead. The entire herd passed over him, their slashing and pounding hooves leaving his body lying in the dirt behind them, battered and torn. Looking up toward the herd, Smoke saw that the cattle had slowed their run to a brisk trot, and as they did, the rest of the wranglers were able to turn them back in the direction they were supposed to be going. The stampede had at last come to an end, brought under control by the courage and will of the young men who had been pushing the herd. With the herd once more under control, Andy and Pearlie came riding back to where Smoke was standing.
Dooley! Dooley! Oh, Dooley!
I'm sorry.
Me and Dooley was together from the time we come into the army at Jefferson Barracks back in St. Louis. We mucked stalls together, walked guard together, put up with sergeants that were scum of the earth, and fought the Indians in a dozen more campaigns, all with a nary scratch between us. Now this.
Cal came back then, leading Dooley's horse.
Get him on the horse. We'll bury him tonight.
Cal nodded, then got down and reached for Dooley.
I'll put him up. He's my friend.
He was a friend to us all.
Andy nodded, then stepped back to allow Cal to help him. They put Dooley belly down across the saddle. Within another hour, the herd caught the scent of water as they approached the Eagle River. They began running again, not stampeding, but moving toward the water at a gait that brought them quickly to the water's edge. The lead cows moved out into the river for a moment. Smoke was afraid that the cows coming up from behind would push the front ranks into deep water where they would drown. Fortunately, the herd had approached the river where a huge sandbar formed a natural ford, and the cattle were able to spread out enough that all could drink their fill. Although they had only come 20 miles today, it had been an unusually rapid 20 miles. So rapid, in fact, that they'd overtaken, then outpaced the chuck wagon. Smoke called a halt to the drive, declaring that they would spend the next 24 hours right there. Ordinarily, arriving at water after such a long, dry spell would be cause for a celebration. But though everyone was thankful for the water, no one felt like celebrating. As Cal came riding toward the chuck wagon, Sally recognized him by the way he sat his horse, even before she could make out his features. She smiled at him.
I saw the herd go by. I expect they've all drunk their fill by now.
Yes, I reckon so.
Cal, what is it? What's wrong?
We had an accident.
Oh, my God, no. It's not Smoke.
No, Miss Sally. It ain't Smoke. He's fine. I didn't mean to scare you like that. It was Dooley.
Dooley?
Yes, it was Dooley, and the thing is, he got himself killed.
Oh.
Smoke sent me out to tell you, to ride into camp with you.
Thanks. I appreciate the company.